Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. I am Jamil Graham, your host, and the Alchemy of Light broadcast is focused on consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And today, we have a fantastic guest with us. His name is Robert Stanley, and he brings to us many gifts. He is a published author and an extraterrestrial enthusiast. He is also a musician. He has traveled the world and probably more than one world. As it happens, when you visit the extraterrestrials, you go places. And I am very, very honored that he has joined us here for the Alchemy of Light broadcast. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you, Jamil. It's a pleasure to be with you.
A pleasure, likewise. And I am very interested in many of your gifts, but I want to share with the listeners, you have just published a new book, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., which is a sequel to the Close Encounters on Capitol Hill. And both of correct, and perhaps you can tell the listeners just a little bit about what those books focus on.
Okay, it's a six-year investigation. I didn't plan it out like that, okay, but about 6 years ago, I was shown some photographs of UFOs swarming over the Capitol building. The picture was taken July 16th, 2002, by a professional photographer living in Washington, D.C., who used to work for ABC News. And I thought it was pretty extraordinary, so I published an article about it with the photographs, and next thing I know, I was being visited by a black helicopter, and I figured, wow, I obviously upset somebody in Washington, D.C., unintentionally, of course. And so I started to investigate a little deeper, and after about a year, I had found over 100 reports of UFOs being sighted in Washington, D.C., which was weird to me because I know, I've been researching UFOs and ETs for years, and I thought it was weird that there was that many reports. And eventually, when I published the first book, I had over 200 reports that I had gathered and analyzed and put into a chronological timeline. People were not receiving that book very well. I mean, not just the book. They didn't believe me. It was really weird. We had film of UFOs swarming over the Capitol. Even some, a few of them, one of them landed on the roof. Another one was hovering over the reflecting pool. I mean, it's just unbelievable to the point where I couldn't understand it. People were skeptical, even though, you know, like I said from the very beginning, I wouldn't even have reported this if we hadn't had the negatives, 35-millimeter negatives, analyzed it independently at a film lab. And they said, yeah, these are real. They haven't been retouched. So, you know, I thought that was a story. I really did. I didn't realize, though, how much resistance I was going to get from people. And that's ultimately why I did the second book, because I found, like I said, the first book was over 200 and something. The second book actually contains over 900 reports. I know that doesn't even sound possible, but what I did was I kept looking and looking and looking and asking around, and I actually found, I think there's more than that. Between 1850 and 2011. So it's like 162 years, okay? And I have a feeling that there's actually a lot more reports or incidents. And, I mean, I'm absolutely positive there was more pictures taken in 1952, but those were all confiscated and classified by the military because they didn't want anybody to see what was going on, or at least they didn't want the people who weren't there at the time in 1952, the civilians, they didn't want the general public seeing what was going on in Washington, D.C. in 1952, because a lot of people were, according to the historic record, a lot of people were out on the mall taking pictures and or movies of these UFOs, because they would loiter for up to 6 hours at a time. You know, jets would chase them. Our military jets would go up, they would chase them, the UFOs would disappear visually and off radar, and as soon as the jets would go away, the UFOs would return. So they were playing cat and mouse with the military, and I guess it was kind of embarrassing or upsetting or whatever to the military, and so they confiscated all that stuff, and fortunately, in the last 6 years, I've been able to find two of those classified movies that were leaked through various media. One of them actually was the Disney Corporation in 1995. In 2005, when I first broke the story, I did that in July of 2005. By October of 2005, a company called Channel 4, which is an affiliate of A&E in England, actually they aired a special, a UFO special, and in it was 17 seconds of that footage from 1952 where the swarm of UFOs flies right over the Capitol. So, yeah, it's just, you know, that's what happened. I mean, that's really why I dedicated the last 6 years of my life to reporting this story, because I thought it was important. I still feel it's important that people should know, you know, that this has been going on.
I agree. And what I think is interesting as well about your work is that you are attempting to bring in a balance in the conversation of the reality of extraterrestrials in general as part of the universe community of which mm-hmm. we are a part. And then as part of the universe community, there's, you know, benevolent interests, and there's malevolent interests, as we have on the planet within the human race. We have some rascals that, you know, are interested in manipulating, controlling, and, you know, that's their role. That's what makes the rainbow, right? And then there's the other end of the spectrum, the benevolent, the ones that come here and balance out the rascals. There's the whole gamut, and that does exist in the extraterrestrial world as well. And I really appreciate that you've taken that on in your work, because I find that in the conversation of consciousness, a couple of things that I would love to go places I might like to go with you here are the Hollywoodization of extraterrestrials, and, you know, even the way those films might have been leaked and Disney gets it. I mean, oh, God, please. You know, the consciousness itself has been saturated with this idea of an extraterrestrial as some figment of sci-fi books, you know, wild, bizarre imagination, and then inserted quickly into a negative genre where the extraterrestrial is another demon, another evil, another invader, another one of all of those things, which keeps the consciousness in a holding place where it's a lot easier to manipulate, right? It's got that fear nicely wrapped around it. Yeah. And so I wonder what in your work as well in the conversation, and I'd like to come back to the conversation of the origin, I think it will work, of you pursued your interest in developing relations with extraterrestrials on a level of camaraderie, on a level of alignment and purpose, and giving credit for that fact, I believe, that the extraterrestrial beings likewise have an investment in harmony and pro-life activity happening here on this planet, that our planet is not an isolated phenomena, that it affects things way into the multiverse. And I would like you to please share with us about the poll that you started and what was the motivation of that, and how did you come to the extraterrestrial experience as friend and foe, because you brought that into your work.
Well, it was part of my experience. Before I even wrote the book, I had met human extraterrestrials that were both good and bad. I mean, it's just that, doesn't that make sense? I mean, how could it be otherwise? They're just human, and we are related to them, so why not? But, the poll, I thought, my understanding from the good guys was that we needed to welcome them here, or I should say invite them to be walk among us and interact with us. I mean, logically, if you think about it, even if somebody wants to help you, unless you ask for that help, it's not going to be well received. So, and besides, even if the good, okay, even if they have the best intentions, if they show up uninvited, somebody would say, wow, they're invading, you know, or they're interfering with our life or whatever, and it would cause a lot of ill will. So my understanding was that it's from the good guys that I've been in touch with, that we needed to vote on it, to see, because this would affect everybody's future. So we wanted to basically have as a barometer to see You know, what would people react like? And I wanted to do this with the first book, but for some reason it just never happened. And now that the second book's out, I've put a poll up on my website at unicusmagazine.com, and you've been gracious enough to put a link on your website back to my poll. And it's free, and it only takes a few minutes, and it's anonymous. And, you know, it's not the main question is, should we welcome a peaceful extraterrestrials to land on Earth and interact with us? But there's actually a series of questions that are ancillary to that. You know, is what kind of relationship would you like to, how deep do you want to take this? I mean, you know, they kind of wanted to get a gauge so far it's been actually very positive. Most people, the majority of people are saying, yeah, we should have contact, and yes, we'd like them to help us. Obviously, they can't do everything for us. I mean, there's a lot of things we have to do for ourselves yet. But what I was told recently, kind of shocking to me, was according to this individual claims he's having contact with the Andromeda Council, is that they have intervened as far as removing some of the bad guys from from the solar system, and mm-hmm. even from the Earth, because they've been so badly interfering, manipulating, and violating our free will for a long time that we didn't even, I mean, it was unfair, really. There was no way we were going to even figure out how to get out of this situation. I mean, they've been so covert. Again, that's why the title of the second book, Covert Encounters, I really had to think about that for a minute. There's a lot of covert negative extraterrestrial activity going on in Washington, D.C. You mentioned demons. There are demonic type of entities that exist in Washington, D.C. The most obvious one was they made a movie about it called The Exorcist, and that's a real story. I mean, that really happened to a young boy. It wasn't a girl, and he was 13 years old. And, you know, I give you all the information is in the conclusion of the book, which I found to be, even though I wrote it, I found it to be quite shocking. I really didn't think that this was going to be, I mean, everybody seems to know there's something wrong with Washington, D.C., but they don't know exactly what it is. They just figure, oh, it's the two-party system, and they're fighting, and no, it's a little deeper than that. You know, there's the negative extraterrestrial influence has been with us for a long, long, long time, just like the good guys, like you were saying. But the reason the good guys are intervening now, even though we haven't actually asked them to some extent, is because of the great transition that's coming, or that's already underway. And that has everything to do with consciousness. So they're sort of clearing the path, sort of leveling the field for us, so that we have more of us have an opportunity to choose whether we evolve to a higher state of being
mm-hmm.
or not at this time.
Hmm. And in the intervention, the conversation of our ascension, just to use that word, there's a lot of words out there about mm-hmm. it, the way that humanity will move to its next incarnation as a species. And the conversation of the manipulation of the human, I wonder if you can explain that to us, as I'm grateful to hear that. I've read some things about that as well, and I'm grateful for that, because it really does make sense that the human has definitely not been given the tools in such a huge way. But also, the human is still, on some level, it seems to be kind of clinging to its infancy. It's still clinging to its I am my body, that's how I call it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it seems to me that in conversation of consciousness, to move into the next level, it would start with understanding that the human is a species, and that we are not the species, we are the soul in the species. And that is the mechanism that I understand is manipulated when we talk about extraterrestrial manipulation of the human race. Is that how you understand it?
Well, more or less, I would phrase it this way: the bad guys basically really they feed off of a dark energy, and they know how to manipulate us so that we are fearful more of the time than less, and or greedy or jealous, or you know, all the dark emotions, all the negative emotions. They tend to foster that in us covertly, so that they can actually get strength from it. They draw some energy from the dark side, literally. The good guys are not like that at all. And I'm very encouraged to see some developments that have come about, such as an alchemical manuscript actually was put out for free on the internet recently on how to generate a philosopher's stone. It's not a myth. The alchemists of old were actually persecuted, and a lot of them were murdered because they were generating this substance. It's basically concentrated chi or life essence, or to put it bluntly, light. They literally concentrated this life force or light into a substance that could be ingested or applied to the skin, and it would cause people to become very healthy, live long lives, become more prosperous, etc. Well, that's counter to what the bad guys want. So the whole thing had to be censored. And the other thing that I found that was very encouraging, a few years ago there was a physicist who'd been involved in the early remote viewing techniques. He'd actually studied, it's kind of odd, a physicist that would study transcendental meditation and ended up working for the remote viewing group of the, pioneered by Bob Monroe at the Monroe Institute. But anyway, when he was doing his astral travels as a physicist, you know, he was grounded in physics, right? But they tell you, the scientific model says that matter is primary. Okay, and that matter and energy are interchangeable, but they never tell you where the energy comes from. So, and when this individual, Mr. Campbell, was traveling in the astral plane, he actually met some individuals that educated him and explained it to him that consciousness is primary, and that everything is a derivative I'll just give you a simple analogy. You know how water, a drop of water, can be three phase states. In other words, a liquid, solid, or a gas.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness, it turns out, a digit of consciousness can actually take three phase states. It can either be pure consciousness, it can be perceived as energy, or it can be matter, depending on the vibrational rate of that digit. Okay, so it's one thing to just say that as a theory, but once you accept that as a fact and start applying that to your life, everything changes. And so for that information to have been made available to us, I think it's primordial, but it seems new to us now, but it's actually, you know, like I said, it is the beginning. That is really where it all begins. That's where it all ends. That's the whole purpose for our being is for consciousness to evolve. That's why we have the multiverse, many, many virtual realities, such as this one that we're in, that are constantly being created and they move from a very chaotic state to a very orderly state. And in the process, in that evolutionary process, information is generated. Experiences, information is really, you know, part of a way of talking about our experiences and our feelings. But to put it bluntly, a very interesting conversation I had with a Native American shaman out here in New England. He told me, he says, everything exists within the mind of God. That was his way. That was their way of stating the same thing I just told you.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree. We really are remembering it's the oldest truths that are now suddenly becoming much more accessible. And it seems that it's just ripe for the taking as humans become more aware, as they genuinely seek this information and then genuinely apply it, because the piece is the commitment, you know. I appreciated you sending me that link, and I enjoyed that. I actually was appreciating that book that you're mentioning, the Book of Aquarius, about that the alchemical process of creating that substance, and it really does make a lot of sense. And one of the pieces I think for consciousness and the current state of humanity now is that in reading that book, I was realizing, yep, this is a good example of what it takes to cultivate this new awareness, because you could not read that book overnight and get it.
No.
You know, that book requires a substantial degree of study and application and thoughtfulness and integration and practice. Mm-hmm. And All of those things were calling out to me of the methodology that we might employ as we take it on ourselves to cultivate our own consciousness to move into a way of life that is much more harmonious. How do you see these transformations manifesting? And as you, if you feel comfortable, as you've integrated this understanding, how has that manifest for you in the conversation of openness to being more of who you are? And how does that connect to your own story? You know, that out there to in here connection is what I'm curious about.
Yeah. I count my blessings every day. Despite the direction that if you read the news every day, you would think everything is really bad. I happen to know it's not. And I try and, you know, put a lot of good information out on my website. In fact, you know, I mean, that's just what I do. My relationship with the universe is that I can have access to any information I want as long as I share it with like-minded people and do not filter it or corrupt it. That's my relationship with the universe. So I see myself as constantly learning and growing, and you know, to some extent that's there's just a number of benefits from that. But I think my greatest pleasure is.
Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I'm sorry, I lost you in the connection.
Am I back now?
You're back. I don't know if the listeners lost you, but I did.
Okay.
Perhaps you could just repeat briefly what you just said.
Okay. So as I was saying, that my relationship with the universe is such that, or the agreement I have with our Creator is that I can have access to any and all information, it, as long as I share it with like-minded people and do not corrupt it or filter it. So that's really why, that for me, I'm putting myself in that position. I'm constantly learning and growing and benefiting from that influx of information and ideas and feelings. It's amazing. Before the internet was actually developed, I already saw it, that we're all connected, like to a it's like a spider web, the web of life. It's there. And maybe, you know, more people will become aware of it as we all lose our the power grid. I mean, it's not funny. I know a lot of people are going to be really upset by it, but at some point, I think not only the power grid, but our whole economic system and basically our way of life is going to is crumbling. And because it's based on a very shaky foundation, very corrupt foundation. So people aren't willing to change until things get really very, desperate or dramatically, you know, tough. And you know, I know we're at our best when things are at their worst, but it's going to take something like that, a series of events that are coming to this world in order for people to even be willing to change into something different. It is a change of season on a galactic plane. You know, we're constantly moving around the galaxy, and you know, just like the Earth has seasons as it moves around the sun itself is moving through the galaxy, and that's what those ages are all about, that our ancestors recorded quite accurately. So we're moving. Our solar system is moving into this more energized zone of the galaxy, and so when we talk about this life essence, or energy, or consciousness that's filtering down to the Earth constantly, there's a flood of it. There's literally a flood of it. This is the whole idea of the water bearer of Aquarius pouring down this so-called elixir from the heavens, from the stars. It's definitely coming. It has been for some time. NASA knows it. They don't really want to talk about it. They call it a huge charged cloud. Charged meaning it's super energetic. They can't understand it. That's why they don't talk about it much. And they give it a weird name like fluff. I don't know where they come up with that. But it's all there on my website at unicusmagazine.com. If you look in the articles, or I've added a new section called Know Thyself. I think those are some critical things, like we've been talking about, some of the more breakthrough pieces of information that have come to us.
I appreciate your website, and there are some fantastic articles on there, and it really is a combination of getting to know ourselves first as well as meeting our world again. And it seems like the world as we have known it is clearly identifying itself as illusory, as the world that whatever we thought it was, it isn't.
Right.
So ideally, as we become more at peace with not knowing and move out of I have to be right and move into that bliss of being the eternal explorer just for the sake of it, what the heck, we don't know and it doesn't matter. let's enjoy today and find out what we can, you know, do and be today. And I agree with you. I have a strong sense as well that the internet and all of our electrical grid is very close to the end of this phase as we've known it.
Right.
And likewise, for the same reasons, it's just not built well. It doesn't support our growth. And I mean, it's the tool of the controlling mechanism of humanity. And
right.
You know, the slothfulness of the human is in part a catalyst, and the need for that. I feel like it's a co-creation. You know, if the human race were jumping up to change, to claim its sovereignty, to turn off their televisions, to feed them their brains and their hearts with loving, healthy relations, and to, you know, actively engage the disassembling of our war toys and all, you know, all these things that we know divide us and conquer us and hurt us. If we were rising to the occasion, we might not have the same reaction. We might be able to more gently move into it, but the slothfulness of the human species, I do believe, is a part of the equation with no blame. I mean, we have these things. We have this extraterrestrial phenomena. I mean, the story of humanity on planet Earth and the Milky Way galaxy is its story, you know?
Yeah.
And we're living through it, and we're here to bring the birthing, I call it the birthing, of the human consciousness into the universal integrity. And that is truly where I believe we are destined, ready or not. And
right. The
entry into the photon belt that I understand, this shifting of the galactic, you can literally see the light. Do you see that where you're at? I have literally noticed an increase in the light, literally, in the night sky.
Yeah,
and it's palpable. It's not that's not covert. Anybody who wants to go outside and study the sky at night might just notice the same thing. It's actually, you know, not something of a theory. It's just, you know, NASA can call whatever they want. You can go out and see for yourself. Have a look.
Yeah, well, and people can feel it too. It's just like anything else, you know, it's amplifying. This energy is amplifying everybody's consciousness and also our emotional body. So this is, again, probably why we're having this conversation, is sort of remind people how important it is to stay positive, because it's going to get really, really chaotic here in supposedly starting this month. The dark forces, what's left of them here, are sort of desperate. They know the light is flooding this world and this region of space, and they know their time is short. So they're desperately trying to hold on. And all they know is darkness and fear and anger and stuff. So they're trying to create more of that so that they don't starve, you know, so they don't lose control. But ultimately, they will lose control. You know, and here's the funny thing. As you say, it's sort of they're not just worthy opponents. I believe my understanding of this simulation we live in is there had to be this dichotomy where, in other words, instead of just having a perfect nirvana, the only way the consciousness could evolve is to have this level of chaos or competition in play. It's part of the rules that are set in, and it's temporary, it's virtual, it serves a purpose. And I know it seems horrible, but we're learning something from it. We're learning some very valuable lessons from this that not just for ourselves, but for the greater good, for the greater mind. You know, it set all of these wheels in motion. For a person, you talk about the human species. It's not limited to just this world. It's throughout this galaxy and many other galaxies. There's humans and humanoids, and I got to tell you, there's other beings that are don't even have a physical body, but they're still intelligent. You know, they just look like shapes. You know, but they're still intelligent. They still interact with us, and they're part of creation. So, and we're going to have an opportunities, increasing opportunities to interact with these beings. That's another thing. Reason I feel like I've been a correspondent for actually the mainstream media for the last 9 months. I've been doing this every Friday. They've had me on their new shows. I think they really started off just as a joke, you know. But it turned out I was saying things that people actually wanted to hear because they weren't hearing it anywhere else, at least not, you know, the average 9-to-5 person. You know, they just going to work and listening to the news. For somebody to interject things about extraterrestrials and other dimensions of consciousness, it was shocking. You know, it wasn't exactly funny either. It was, I mean, I was trying to be, we had some laughs, we were still having good fun about it. But the point I'm trying to make is that the even the mainstream media is evolving right now. You know, whether they like it or not, everything is changing. So it's important for us to recognize that you know, it's a good time to stay open, to open our minds and our hearts and embrace these changes. I know that's kind of hard to do, but that's the one constant in creation is change. Otherwise evolution stops. I mean, equilibrium is not something that's sought after. I mean, it's really not. That's the end of the game. That's time to start all over, I guess, at that point. But equilibrium means no more growth. You know, so when you look at yin-yang, it's not perfectly balanced. It's really chasing itself. It has to remain dynamic. Otherwise, it's not a living entity anymore.
That makes sense. I can appreciate that. And would you tell us about the different types of extraterrestrials that you're familiar with that are both carnate and incarnate? And I know that there are, refer them as well to the books as that's appropriate. But one thing that I find is helpful as we make these shifts is that when a big part of facing a fear is to look at the information, and then when we have an understanding that an extraterrestrial might be like this or a spirit being might be like that, then when we meet it, it's less scary, you know?
Well, there's always, in my opinion or my experiences and other people's experiences, when you encounter something of the unknown like that, it's usually frightening because of the fight or flight response that we all seem to have. So this is, again, just talking about it sort of helps prepare people for a possible encounter with these beings. It's another reason why I wanted to, we would all benefit by inviting them. At least that way we're all a little bit more prepared for what comes next. Because here's the thing, just because an extraterrestrial is human, that doesn't make them good. Just because an extraterrestrial is a reptilian humanoid, that doesn't make them bad either. You really have to take it on an individual basis, just like anybody else. So it's going to take a lot of discernment, a lot of patience, and a lot of intestinal fortitude. You know, I mean, seriously, people have to. We have to stop thinking of ourselves as just little specks of dust on this world. This is one of the reasons I was talking about consciousness. The new, it's called digital physics, what I was telling you about consciousness being primary. We all are a lot more important than we know, but not for the reasons that we think. In other words, the ego serves a purpose, but it's also sort of like a governor on a motor, so it doesn't blow itself up. It's a built-in limiter or limitation that we need it right while we're in this dimension or this frequency, till we're ready to move on to a higher frequency, and at that point, the limitations will just drop away. Some of those limitations will just drop away. And the reason is, again, is because as consciousness evolves, sort of like taking the training wheels off the bike, you know, we move to a higher level, there's also more responsibility that comes with that. But we've earned it. We will have earned it. And we will be able to manifest or co-create much, much greater things. Think almost what most people consider miraculous now. You know, like sort of like the great avatar sages of the past, our masters, they could do things that we just didn't understand. So we'd go, wow, that's a miracle. No, it's just it's consciousness. It's you know, these people have figured it out. They know from experience or from an education based in, you know, practical experiences that this is a reality. This is the greater reality that they're working with, and we just don't see it yet, partially because we've been trained not to. Honestly, you know, the bad guys have kept us ignorant for a long time. It's sort of like I don't like to use this analogy, but it's the only one I can think of, is when we brought slaves from Africa over here, in order to keep them under control, it was illegal to educate them. And so it's sort of like the reason why, generally speaking, people on this planet have not been given access to this higher knowledge yet. I mean, basically because, you know, we've been enslaved by some very nefarious groups.
Well, they've used that with women. They use that to this day. Right. The poor,
right.
You know, I mean, America is one of the most openly discriminant in education. They not only do they infiltrate the universities of their big name, they make sure that you can't go there if you don't have any money, you know. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. You know, education is very, to this day, a tool for even in the main, you know, even in what we think is available, we'll get money and go there. No, even then you get there and then you're still not given accurate information. I wonder, I'm wondering, how do you see, like, one thing that I have to thank Alfred Weber for is that the idea of the governments and our systems themselves being so thoroughly, thoroughly corrupted by the nefarious forces, this incredibly brilliant, I mean, these guys are smart, incredibly, incredibly thorough manipulation of the system, the corruption is to the core. Is there anything that you see in the systems themselves that are reflective of the higher place we're going? Or are these systems just completely useless and just part of this nefarious part of our evolution, or, you know, the system idea itself, can it be cleansed and brought into the higher vibration?
I think I gave you the analogy through an email. I was talking about that it would literally burn itself up to ashes, and then it turns to the worm, which becomes the phoenix bird. And, you know, it's a cycle. It's a cycle. No, I don't think that we can rehabilitate the current system. It's just, it's too corrupt, and it was manipulated, and the foundation of it is based, rooted in the dark side. You know, I mean, John McCain, not a fan, but whatever, he's gone around talking about, he says he does the Lord's work in Satan's city. And when I first heard that, I thought, whoa, that's, what a weird thing to say, ha ha. Turns out it's not funny at all. When you read the conclusion of my second book, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C., it's shocking, but I mean, I stand by what I wrote there, which is, or what I discovered, which is that there are still demonic entities. It didn't stop in 1949 with the boy, which later became the movie or the book and book The Exorcist. There's a demon in the Capitol. They know this. Okay, I mean, they tell you about it when you take a tour, and they call it the demon cat. I mean, it appears to people usually as a small cat that grows into the size of a panther and then just vanishes. But I mean, it's there. It's there.
Really?
You know? Yeah, I know. And here's the your reaction is typical to most people. You've never heard of this, and neither did I until I did the research. There's a lot of things I learned about Washington D.C. that nobody seems to know anything about, which I find very disturbing. Again, though, if you go back in history, and like, you know, one of these texts in Egypt is really, really old. It was a Gnostic text called the Nag Hammadi. It talks about these beings that came here, that invaded this world and created this illusory system for their benefit and our detriment. And there's legions of them, and there's like a hierarchy, or it's almost like, you know, how the military breaks into ranks. But one level of them is called the Archons, and they definitely exist. I mean, you can call them what you want, but they're just nasty, and they don't have our best interests at heart, and they know how to manipulate us covertly very, very, very well. I mean, this whole thing about right now it's popular is vampirism, you know, vampires. You see in the news recently, young people are acting like vampires. Well, where does that come from? It's not just the media. It's these manipulative extraterrestrial entities that have been feeding off of us, off of our negative energy, sort of like cattle, you know, the way we milk cattle. That's it's a terrible analogy. I'm sorry to offend anybody, but, the power system, the world that we live in right now, currently, the structure, the power structure of politics, religion, economics, military, all that is tied into Washington, D.C. and the Vatican. And they're intimately linked. And they both have a history, a long history, of knowledge of and infiltration or manipulation by dark extraterrestrial beings. So here's the deal. The only reason I'm saying this is because you can't solve a problem unless you know you have one. And I believe that this, somebody had to expose this before we can start addressing a problem. We got to first agree that there even is a problem. And I can see why 6 years is really not, it's just a drop in the bucket, relatively speaking. I didn't have the full story. It took me 6 years just to figure this out. So I don't know how many more years I'm going to have to keep reporting this till people start to finally get the message and begin to act on it. But I do know, like I say, all right, I want to believe. I really want to believe that the good guys are there too. I report a little bit of that in there. There's some really strange entities out there. When you talk about what they look like, a lot of them are humanoid. One of the weirdest ones, though, my journalism partner that I told you about that took the pictures, that's how I got involved originally. His name is Wilbur Allen. He's got a website called UFODC.com. He took some pictures of a shape-shifting entity that was flying silently over the buildings near Georgetown University. Now, he was standing next to a group of Washington, D.C. police officers. He sent me those pictures. I looked at it, and I go, wow, that's not a UFO. That thing's alive. That thing is alive. I mean, it kind of freaked me out because I'd never seen anything like it before. Turns out other people have taken movies of it in different parts of the world or something like it. And then a few weeks later, this other guy posts on the Internet a whole long story about, from his intelligence contacts in military intelligence. They talked about that particular type of entity is from Delta Pavonis and how they captured one in D.C. that they can actually shapeshift into looking like humans, even though they don't. They're not humans at all, at all. So, I mean, you kind of understand too now why the government wouldn't, even if they know that for a fact. How do you tell the public this? Well, you could cause a lot of upheaval, unrest in society if the government officially started saying, some of the people living here are not from here, and some of them aren't even human. I mean, it's like that's like right out of the Twilight Zone. You know what I mean? That really doesn't excuse it either. That's just a simple way of. I'm just kind of being silly now because the government actually knows. I mean, whoever is running the government, I would say most of them are involved with secret societies, and they, from my understanding, they definitely have a covert relationship with extraterrestrials. In fact, it may have been the dark extraterrestrials that started this whole secret society nonsense to begin with. Mm-hmm. In other words, like a group of people that are overseers. In other words, the extraterrestrials themselves don't have to do the dirty work. They just hire these guys, these greedy people that are kind of they want to get ahead, and they're willing to treat us. They all mistreat us on behalf of the bad guys so that they get some sort of benefit.
Right.
Put themselves ahead of everybody else, but they're still stuck in the same system that we are. Even if they have a few advantages or perks, whatever it is, I actually kind of feel sorry for those guys. I've met a few of them, and oh God, it's such a paranoid existence that they lead, and they have no allegiance to each other, and they have to serve these dark masters. I mean, it's like, please, you don't see the, you don't, I mean, can't you see? You don't see anything wrong with that. It's just pretty strange. But anyway, that's, like I say, it's all about free will, too. You know, again, this is the only way consciousness can evolve is for each one of us to have free will. So we could, I mean, if you can't make choices, that's not evolutionary at all. You're just an automaton.
How do you define free will? I would love to hear your definition of free will.
Yeah, it's the ability to make a choice.
Okay. So
that's all.
So in essence, there's nothing that can ever really take that from us. We always have a choice in any situation.
We don't necessarily choose
the situations, but we can choose how we respond to those situations.
True. Well, yes. And especially if you, when I'm talking about these opponents of ours, you know, most people would like to see themselves as victims. I don't.
Right.
I say we're survivors. I think we're extremely resilient.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're actually afraid of us evolving. You know, that scares them a lot. That's one reason that they have blocked us with, you know, by putting all this, you know, things like fluoride in the water and you know, aluminum and barium and all kinds of nonsense in the air and MSG and all everything. It's just like they've done, you know, everything they can think of to try and keep it, you know, to block us from having a connection to these higher frequencies, so that we, you know, so we don't evolve and basically fly the coop, you know, and leave them just in the dark by themselves.
You gave us a really good key, though, in terms of facing the opponent, and that is to keep a positive mind, an open heart, a loving open heart, and a positive mind are things they cannot control.
And yeah, they don't. They're sort of allergic to that. I mean, it's like, you know, you can't fight fire with fire. You have to use water, okay, to really put it out. And that's the same thing, you know. You can't abolish hate by hating. That doesn't work. You got to use love. And unfortunately, that's something that's really lacking in our media right now. And I'm pretty sure that's why more and more people are turning away from it. So the future is extremely bright, but I think it's going to be darkest before the dawn. I do think we're in for some really tough times, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you about this is just to remind people that focus, whatever makes you feel good or happy or content, focus on that even in the midst of the crisis or the chaos that ensues. As is, you know, sort of like you call the birth pains of the transition, it's really going to be a little crazy, get a little more crazy, especially when the power goes out again and the economy goes over the cliff right now, which is, it's, a lot of people don't understand. They think it's just a little bump in the road. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. We hit a ditch before we go over the cliff, unfortunately. But, again, this house of cards needs to fall. Once it's done, we can rebuild it differently, better. You know, for everybody's benefit, as opposed to just a handful of elitists that don't really, they're not very compassionate or creative or, you know what I mean? It's just, we can do so much better.
Yeah, and I feel like there is the divine plan is in motion, and there's something that's been really acute in my learning in the last few years, and just understanding that the divine plan is in motion and that we are a very, very important part of it. Every single thought of ours, every single glass of water we take, every time we look at somebody or speak to somebody, everything about us, every hair on our body is so important to that divine plan and our ability to be present and to choose to be in the life that we have chosen. And I am 100% with you in that there are no victims here. We have all chosen as soul beings to come to this planet at this exact time to share in the travail, the celebration, all of it. And the victims, you know, that we won't need anymore because we'll have completed this phase. And one thing that comes to me often as well is that we need to remember, those of us who can see this is what comes to me often, is if I can see these pictures, this particular place where I've come to integrating and understand that other people haven't come to that place of integration, then for me, the big school is compassion. That means that I can be that much more loving and compassionate toward that person and be hyper mindful that it's not a competition. This is not a place we compete. I don't know more or they don't know less. The bottom line is that we're all in this together, and what they don't know, I know, but what they know, I don't know. Right. We really, the whole idea is to work together. And so if I have a particular piece, then my deal is to be more compassionate and more loving and accessible with what I have to offer and completely discard any notion that I might have something more or better or any of that. That's just useless. That's not going to be helpful. This is a message that comes to me. It's like, we really are in this together. Every single person is so important. Every single heart matters now. Every single one.
Well, one of the reasons we've come to this point of what we, you know, people call it healthy competition. It's not. It's because, again, it's what the dark side has done to us is divide and conquer. Mm. They've given us a bunch of reasons not to work together, to cooperate and you know, help each other. So, you know, this is the whole idea. You know, I mean, this is how wars start. You know, we must compete. They don't call it that, but they say, you know, they justify murdering one another because of, for whatever reason, religious, political, financial, you know, retribution. There's all these stupid things that they're not real. But, you know, if you buy into it, it's real enough, you know, and then the next thing you know, you're out there driving a tank or flying a jet and dropping a bomb, and it's like, come on. We could have... You know, we could have colonized Mars by now in the last 100 years if we had taken all the stuff we'd done for all the world wars and Korean War and Cold War and all that nonsense. We could have completely terraformed Mars and have, you know, built, you know, new oceans. And I mean, it's insane, absolutely insane what all the resources and time and stuff that we've wasted.
It is. And I feel like, in a way, that's a gift that we haven't done more. I believe there have been covert operations. I do believe there is life on Mars, and I do believe there are life on many planets, actually, some humanoid and also plenty of extraterrestrial communities out there. But I do believe there are humans on Mars. But I think it's a good thing we didn't go there. Because we haven't stopped war.
Right.
I believe that we have to stop killing each other. Because what is the colonization means? What? Go and kill people? Go drop bombs? Go set up new Gazas and destroy places like Haiti and put more concentration camps out there? And then that's what I think they have in mind for America. You know, get rid of all the jobs and put people in little camps and control them. I mean, this is what colonization looks like now, and I don't think we belong anywhere. If we can't stop killing each other, if we can't find a way to love ourselves and respect ourselves as part of the divine plan and respect all life, then we better not go anywhere because we're not really good companions, you know. I wouldn't want to have us going anywhere else, personally.
No, we're not good neighbors, that is for darn sure. And even though the military does have plans to go colonize other places, I don't think it's going to happen. The good ETs, my understanding, that's another reason the good ETs stepped in at this time, because as we transition to this higher state of being, if the dark side was allowed to do its dirty work, continue to do its dirty work, they could have basically turned this into a, not just a prison planet, but everybody would have been part of a global military force that moved off this world. And that would have been really bad. That would have been seriously bad news, because we would have had not only nuclear weapons, we would have had all the back-engineered stuff that the bad extraterrestrials basically seeded on this planet covertly, like a Trojan horse. You know, this is another reason the military doesn't want to tell us that they know extraterrestrials here, because they've been baited into this relationship where, yeah, hey, you want this is going to give you an advantage over your enemy. Excuse me, we're all humans here. Who's the real enemy? Wouldn't it be the people that came and infiltrated you know, secretly invaded this world thousands of years ago, wouldn't you guys be the enemy? Now you're trying to be our friend, or behind the scenes, you know, you're trying to special interest groups, you know, it's like, hey, I'll make you powerful. You could be more powerful than the rest of your little human counterparts. It's like, wow.
Wow. Well, anyway. I just got word we have sped our hour, and want to give the last couple of minutes to you to please again tell us your any upcoming events, special news, your contact information, and the like.
I mean, everything that I do is found at unicusmagazine.com. Okay. I've got a variety of stuff there. You could spend quite a few days just checking all that out if you're interested. I also have an email link there, or I've got a blog. Occasionally I put new blogs up, and just a lot of information, radio interviews and things that I've been doing. If you're interested, unicusmagazine.com, and the books are for sale there too if you'd like to see what's really been going on in Washington, D.C.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Robert, joining us. What a pleasure it's been. And thank you all to the listeners for joining us as well. And take good care of yourselves. Take good care of each other. And we will see you in a fortnight. This is Jamil Graham signing off the Alchemy of Light broadcast.